This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Okay, everyone, welcome to the People Speak radio show. Got an interesting guest this evening, former professor of physics, Stephen Jones, who's done some very important, very significant research into the collapse of the Twin Towers on 9/11. He's found evidence of explosives having been used. Some of you, I'm sure, have heard of him. And so he's going to be here to share with us some of his previous findings as well as some of his latest findings. He's pretty much been working nonstop on this project for several years now and has brought out some very important information. And as you might guess, that information has not been warmly received by the mainstream media. But, you know, that's par for the course, isn't it, in this George Orwellian world that we live in. Before I bring him on, just want to mention, if anyone has any comments or questions for our guest today, you can dial in toll-free internationally at 877-489-6350. Again, that's 877-489-6350. Or you can call toll-free within the U.S. and Canada at 888-228-4494. Again, that's 888-228-4494. And the website for The People Speak Radio is www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. So go and check it out. Okay, let's bring our guest up here. We've got, again, Professor Stephen Jones. Welcome to the show, Professor Jones.
Well, thank you, Charles. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Yeah, great to have you. Let's go back to the beginning. You know, how it was that you started to become suspicious of 9/11 and what got you involved in the first place, you know, doing this research.
Sure. Well, that would be spring of 2005. Seems like a long time ago.
Yeah.
3 years ago. A little
sure.
Over three.
Time flies.
I had been nudged by friends of mine, one of whom has a PhD in physics, to look into the events of 9/11 with a critical eye and not just from the point of view of the official story, you know, that Al-Qaeda alone was responsible. That would be, in a nutshell, the official story. And that the buildings came down by fire plus damage. Three. I had never, at that point, seen the collapse of Building 7, World Trade Center 7. I'd seen the towers, of course. I mean, I guess pretty much everybody has.
Yeah, not much attention was given to Building 7.
No. So it was in spring of 2005 that I finally settled down and started, after being nudged a couple times, several times, I finally settled down at my computer and looked on the Internet. I came to WTC7.net, Jim Hoffman's work, and saw for the first time the collapse of Building 7. Right away, I pulled out my stopwatch, you know, I have on my wrist, incidentally, and measured the time for the fall of the roof there, and then compared that with freefall time for, bowling ball dropped off the roof. Bowling
that
ball
in itself
six,
is very suspicious.
Oh yeah, that was very suspicious. About 6 seconds for freefall. And in a vacuum, by the way. And the roof line came down that day, September 11th, but about 7 hours after the towers came down. That's
right.
Also suspicious that, you know, it wasn't hit by a jet, but here it comes down in 6.5 seconds. And then I compared that with controlled demolitions that we know were done with explosives, and they generally have the same behavior. That is just a little over freefall time for the collapse of the buildings. And, you know, even NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, agreed that the towers came down in essentially in free fall time. think that was their term, essentially. I could look that up in our latest paper. Yeah, essentially.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they did say that. Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, we agree with him on that, but they don't explain it, you see.
Right, exactly.
We do have an explanation for it.
Well, interestingly enough, in their initial, 10,000-plus page report dealing with the two main towers collapse, they admitted that what they were attempting to do in that report is explain the collapse of the towers from the point of impact up, but they weren't attempting to explain the collapse from the point of impact down. That's not what they were addressing. In other words, they were admitting they don't know what caused the rest of the buildings to collapse.
Yeah, let me say on that, we pushed NIST with a request for correction last year, myself and James Gurley and some others, including some family, that is, people who lost, like Bob McElvain, lost a relative, in his case a son, on 9/11. And so anyway, we wrote to NIST and pushed them on a number of issues, and they wrote back and they admitted, again, I'm going to look at this 14 points paper, which I hope people will read. It's in a civil engineering journal. We just got it published this spring. Anyway, they admit that we are unable, let's see, this letter is in response to your April 12, 2007 request for correction. We are unable to provide a full explanation of the total collapse. They wrote that to us, and of course we put that out in the Journal of 9/11 Studies, so people can read their full response. But they freely admitted that they were unable to provide a full explanation, and yet
sure.
They were charged by Congress to provide that explanation. So we feel that we've made some progress that way by pointing out the difficulties in the official story. The official story, frankly, is full of holes, and we allude to these holes in our 14 points paper and in other publications, and I'm sure...
Well, they make some other incredibly laughable statements. For example, they say that we found no evidence of explosives used at Ground Zero. Well, of course not. Or we found no molten steel. But of course not, because by the time their so-called investigation started, the molten steel had been removed from Ground Zero, so they could legitimately...
That relates... Let me say, I've made a point of this, and listen, it is a little bit funny, almost, except that there are people's lives at stake here. Of course, the 9/11 wars were based on this official story.
Mm-hmm.
So here's an investigative reporter, Jennifer Abel, and I quote her in the 14 points paper. She called the NIST spokesman for this issue of the World Trade Center collapse destruction. And she said, she published this in her newspaper there, New Hampshire. What about that letter where NIST said it did not look for evidence of explosives? Mr. Newman, here's the NIST spokesperson, replies, right, because there was no evidence of that. Now, she didn't give up. She said, but how can you know there's no evidence if you don't look for it first? Now, listen to Newman's reply. If you're looking for something that isn't there, you're wasting your time. In other words, we assume it's not there, therefore we don't look, because, you see, it's just evasive and rather circular, actually.
Well,
it does become a little bit funny, the way these guys avoid some questions. But they do
respond
to others.
They also admitted, and I'm sure you saw this, they came out in August of, 2006, that question and answer sheet on their website, NIST.
Yes.
And
right.
On the one hand, they said, yeah, no evidence of explosives. On the other hand, they stated later on that they never tested any of the steel for explosive residue. I mean,
that's right.
We never found any fingerprints of Mr. Smith at the crime scene, but we didn't test for fingerprints at the crime scene.
And then somebody asked, well, did you look? No, we didn't look. it is funny. And, of course, this leads to us to demand... an investigation, and we are conducting that investigation. As you look at what we're doing here, we are looking at the World Trade Center dust. We're finding evidence for explosives, cutter charges in the dust, and very high temperatures that occurred during the destruction of these buildings. So,
absolutely, and that's certainly what we want to get into in considerable detail tonight. Exactly what you have been finding. As a matter of fact, what you've been finding. As a matter of fact, there really isn't anything that hasn't been seen, in the collapse footage and in the research you've done, that you wouldn't expect from a controlled demolition. In fact, in other words, everything that you would expect from a controlled demolition is there, isn't it? There isn't anything that isn't there that you would expect.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. I think David Ray Griffin was the first to go through that analysis and say, well, here are the characteristics of controlled demolition. Essentially at free fall speed, straight down, collapse, of course, residues he didn't mention at the time, but we have found those since.
Sure, the squibs.
Squibs is something he mentioned. There are other explanations for squibs, but these other observations, very difficult to explain in the official story. Of course,
well,
the residue of explosives.
Well, one of the explanations for the squibs, which I find to be laughable, is that, they were caused from the pressure from above, forcing debris out below. But the problem with that is the squibs are, first of all, very localized. If it was pressure from above, you would see squibs coming out windows all the way around on one floor. You wouldn't see just one window on one floor. But also, you see squibs in some of the footage. You also see squibs several, dozen floors below the point where the crumbling is taking place.
Right. Well, you raise them. Good points. I'd like to say that the people who are arguing for squibs early on when my paper came out and challenged the official story, that would be in November of 2005. Anyway, they were talking about pancaking of floors, which was the FEMA explanation and had already also been promoted by the Popular Mechanics article on 9/11, which... both of these promoted the pancaking of floors.
Yeah.
But NIST, let me just quote from one of the NIST reports as we challenged the pancake theory. NIST findings do not support the pancake theory of collapse. That's quoting directly from a NIST report. And it's in our 14 points paper. So
right, so they admit it themselves.
Yeah, so they admit it. So the pancake theory is out. So when people raise to me the Popular Mechanics article, I say, well, the fundamental scientific or engineering premise in that article was the pancake collapse theory of FEMA, and NIST rejected that. And they go through, and they, as I read the summary statement, their findings do not support the pancake theory. And
right.
They say more about they.
Well, you know what I found is the claim, of course, behind the pancake theory is this idea of accumulating weight, that causes the collapse. But there really isn't accumulating weight because the towers are pulverizing to dust as they fall.
Yeah.
That's why you found dust all over Lower Manhattan, 2 to 3 inches thick. That's what became of the buildings, essentially.
Yeah, and see, we find a point of agreement here with NIST again. So what we're finding is that NIST, as they looked at this, they really did uncover, they throw out the pancake theory. They admit that the towers came down essentially at free fall speed. Of course, we're still waiting for their report on Building 7. So, but that's in itself an admission, that is, that it's been delayed so many times now, an admission of the difficulty in explaining the collapse of Building 7, which is certainly one of the major smoking guns of what really happened on 9/11. So the point is that in our 14 points paper, we note areas of agreement. There are some good people at NIST, and they have admitted that they're unable to provide a full explanation.
Right.
So there's a basis here for discussion. Unfortunately, while I have written directly to NIST and sent them this report in a peer-reviewed civil engineering journal, they have not responded. And that is disappointing. They did respond to our request for correction, but of course you realize that's a legal document and they were legally bound to respond. So they did.
Right.
And that's where they admitted they did not have the full explanation. But we're making some progress, but it's like pulling teeth to get people to admit that there are errors or at least serious weaknesses in the official story. But nevertheless, we are making progress there scientifically and on grounds of experiments and observations of the World Trade Center dust and so on.
Well, I mean, it's hard to expect a government agency to be honest when the government seems to have the most to gain from something like 9/11,
Yeah, it's a little hard to know who to turn to. Like I say, there are some gems of truth coming through the NIST reports. And
sure.
So if they would just be free to speak and would speak to us publicly, we just, that's what I've been after now for months, is an opportunity to sit down, discuss these things with these guys, preferably publicly, so that others can see what we're doing. Meanwhile, we're publishing papers and proceeding in that way, which is a scientific way, but the stakes here are so high in terms of lives and, you know, impending wars. We could talk about Iran, for example.
Right.
Concerns about, people overlook the powder keg, if I could mention it this way, a powder keg of Pakistan. They have nuclear weapons. There's no question. And it's like, why don't we, it's just a whole house of cards built up on this foundation that Al-Qaeda alone caused 9/11, you see. And they alone brought down the towers by three skyscrapers by hitting two of them with blades. So this whole story, you know, leads to, well, we have to attack Afghanistan, U.S., not we, because I don't support it.
Yeah,
but
right.
Anyway, I never did, but we need to attack, the U.S. needs to attack Afghanistan, Iraq, now Iran, and, you know, where will it end? And how will it end? I mean, I think the way to peace, frankly, is to get the truth out and to have people realize that the foundation of these 9/11 wars is a false foundation.
Sure.
In other words, there was more going on than just what the official story says. There were no air defenses that day.
I was just going to say, remember after 9/11, they were talking about, oh, we're looking at the long haul here. This could be 100 years and involve 60 countries that we will invade.
Right.
I mean, very obvious that it just wanted war.
Right. And, you know, some of us want peace and truth.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, those two do seem to come together. Because as we get the truth out, I'm hopeful that we'll then be able to reach peace.
Well, it is getting out. In spite of the fact that the mainstream media isn't cooperating, it's still getting out.
Yeah, like, and now you look at, for instance, Michael Reagan saying that those who promote the 9/11 conspiracy theory, I think, should be shot. Now, is that peaceful?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, those that obstruct the truth getting out advocate violence.
Right.
And I find that all over. Whereas those who, in general now, who advocate getting the truth out and having a further investigation of 9/11, advocate peace and seek it and provide that this truth, as we find it, will lead to an end to the 9/11 wars. In other words, an end to peace. So there's a correlation there that I hope the listeners can appreciate, between the truth about 9/11 and peace.
And yet they'll say that us looking for the truth are un-American, yet you can't get more un-American than to say you should be shot for opening your mouth.
Right, right. I think
double
there's a First Amendment right
yeah.
to...
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
And of course in science, trying to shut people up who are doing research regarding, for instance, the World Trade Center dust, well, that's just bad science to try to prevent and obstruct the investigation of what's in the World Trade Center dust. Nasty stuff, I might say. And yet the White House and EPA said, oh, it's safe, go back to work.
Yeah, right.
Well, scientists were screaming, this stuff is very dangerous. It has asbestos. The pH is high. In other words, it's highly alkaline. It's like breathing liquid Drano, one of the scientists said, pH around 10.
And unfortunately, there's been dozens that have died and hundreds more that have Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yeah, again, the truth helps us to have health and peace, you know. It sets us free, as Jesus said, right? He was right about that. The truth sets you free. And
sure.
So, right. And so that's what we're after. And for
sets the average person free, but it locks in jail the criminals.
Well,
that's the point. The truth.
That's part of it, right? Justice and truth go together too, just like peace and truth, right? So these are the great goals of the 9/11 truth movement, I think, or peace and justice.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And health, if you get down to the level of the dust. And you know, it's amazing that the government lied to us. They did, about the dust. They said it was safe when it was not safe. And I pointed that example out to people around here. There are a lot of conservatives around here, which is fine. I don't know if that term means much anymore. If conservative means warmonger, then I'm not a conservative. And if patriotism means warmongering, then sorry, I have to disagree with the definition there of patriotism. To me, patriotism has more to do with the Constitution and fundamental human values that we used to have in our country, you know, truth and justice and caring for people more than for corporations. And
the word Christian doesn't have any meaning anymore. You know, Bush is supposed to be a Christian. To him, turning the other cheek means let me hit you on the other side, too.
So there are these issues that come in very quickly as we study the truth and search it out. I'm finding the science to be fascinating, I must say. And the World Trade Center dust there, I've been talking about these spheres that we and others have found. And more recently, I've been talking about these chips that are red on one side and gray-black. I'm looking at some now on my computer screen based on photographs I took today through a microscope. These are just rich in the information that's carried by these chips. Their presence in the dust is a bit disturbing because...
What do you attribute that to?
Well... I can just say a little about it now. We're working now on scientific papers. And again, as part of science that the protocol, and this goes back really to days of Isaac Newton publishing in peer-reviewed journals.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're preparing to do. And the protocol is that you can talk about discoveries in an academic setting, but then you're expected to publish before you talk too much about these findings. So at the University of San Diego State University, I should say, just a few months ago, I spoke about the red chips. And since it was an academic setting, I could talk about it there. So let me just say that the proof will and the data will be in the journal papers as we're preparing those.
In the coming weeks or months.
Yeah, I think we're talking. Hopefully.
Well, can I ask this?
By August.
Is this something that you anticipated and went looking for, or is it something you found?
No, it was not. It was something that I found just about a year ago. It was June of last year, according to my logbooks, that I first noticed these chips. They're red on one side and black gray on the other. And I've stated at San Diego State and elsewhere, the red part has the composition of thermite. In other words, aluminum and iron and oxygen.
Uh-huh.
And I have ignited some of these chips. And again, those results will be in the papers, but they do ignite.
Wow.
Vigorously, violently, and to find this form of thermite in the World Trade Center dust immediately raises.
So this is more than just residue. This is actual.
This is the thermite before it has reacted.
Wow!
Right.
Amazing.
And some of the chips are partially reacted. So
sure,
we're finding that. In other words, these are
how big are the chips?
They vary, but the ones that survive in the dust that we found are small. In other words, the biggest one is about 3/16 of an inch, 3 millimeters by 1/16, 1 millimeter. And so they're small.
This is amazing. Yeah, this is something new that I hadn't heard.
Hadn't you heard about the residue? Red creatures? Oh, yeah.
What's
yeah, this is it's not just a smoking. A smoking gun would be after the fact, right? And the gun's still smoking. This is a loaded gun. It hasn't gone off yet.
Sure. Literally.
And we can make it go off in the lab and see how violent the reaction is. So these data will be coming out. There's so much. I mean, we're using optical microscopy, of course, but then in addition, scanning electron microscopy, transmission electron microscopy, and so on. I probably won't go through all the methods, but we're really probing the chips and...
This is amazing. This is way beyond your previous... I mean, you know,
previously
you found the little nodules and so forth, which is, of course,
right.
highly suspicious, but this here,
right.
like you said... This is the gun with the bullets. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
Unignited. I was just going to say unignited thermite or
yeah,
thermite.
Unignited,
this is just...
right? Unreacted. So, we're just chomping at the bit to get this data out there so that we can discuss these results freely and the implications. And you know, what's disturbing to me, I've talked to a congressman or his staff members, and the congressman here three times, they said, oh, you know, you have a legitimate concern. You'll be able to talk to your congressman. We're just setting it up. And then it goes dead. Then I try another staff member, goes dead. This is with Congressman Cannon of Utah. I live in that district. And, you know, I have a legitimate concern, and the Constitution allows us to appeal for redress of grievances. Well, I have a grievance here. it seems the watchdog role has been assigned to Congress by the Constitution. So I believe I have a right. Now, I have some good news on that point, and this is just about 1 week ago today, I think it was, yeah. There was a primary election here in Utah, and Mr. Cannon was defeated in the primary. So he will not be the congressman after the new Congress convenes.
Excellent.
And the new fellow, I like to see that change because it's some of these congressmen who have opposed even an investigation or a serious investigation based on the fact that NIST says they're unable to provide a full explanation for the destruction of the World Trade Center, then we need another investigation, right? So
absolutely.
It seems so clear to me. Plus now with these chips surviving in the World Trade Center dust and so on. There's just so much information. We really are in a position to demand this investigation. And those who oppose even investigations say that we should be killed, shot. Asking. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible.
That's
still
American, isn't it?
As you pointed,
yeah.
For Michael Reagan. And
I mean, this is very transparently obvious that these people are simply engaging in a cover-up, and they're trying to silence people that are asking questions that need to be asked, that must be asked. You know, this is not squeaky clean by any means. This is just totally fascinating. I can't wait to get back, but we have to take a short break at this time.
Okay.
But stick with us, folks. We'll be right back with Professor Jones talking about some more amazing revelations that he's been finding in his research. Be right back.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. Economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
Got questions? The library's got answers. and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
This land is yours.
Join us on the People Speak Radio Show every Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of entertainment, education, activism, spirituality, politics, and literature. Get involved and make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak every Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio Network.
Okay, folks, welcome back. Again, this is your host, Charles Giuliani, hosting tonight on the People Speak Radio Show. And our guest is Professor Stephen Jones, who has done extensive research, still ongoing, into what caused the collapse of the World Trade Center towers. He has some fascinating revelations. The number to call in if you have any comments or questions for our guest this evening is internationally toll-free is 877-489-6350. Toll-free in the United States and Canada, 888-228-4494. And we actually do have a caller right now. We have Scott in Kansas City. Welcome to the show, Scott. Are you there, Scott?
Hello, Scott.
I think we might have lost him.
Hey, I would definitely like to thank you for your sacrifice and dedication to exploring what actually happened on 9/11. I don't think people realize that you've lost your job, and well, a lot of people do, but many probably don't. But you sacrificed your job as a result of your findings in this on these events. But my question has a regard to this last weekend. I believe they tried the demolition of a building that remained standing. And, I would like maybe if you could compare those buildings, or were you even aware of that building that they tried to demolish this weekend, that the frame remained standing after they imploded it. And how can the government actually think they can get away with bringing down a building 48 stories tall with fires on two floors and no impact? I mean, it's really beyond me how naive Americans have become and just believe everything that the mainstream media parrots. Were you aware of that building?
Excellent point.
Okay, thanks, Scott. We'll have to cut you off because we've got a lot of other questions. But
yeah, let me go quick on that one then.
Sure.
I am aware of that building, and apparently what happened is the cutter charges did not go off in the core columns of that building, so it did not completely collapse. And he raised a great point. So how is it that the towers, which had enormous core columns, and Building 7 as well had core columns, how could they collapse without even having, according to the official story, without even having cutter charges, you see? Why weren't the cores standing if the rest of the building came down? These are very, very salient and provocative questions. And unfortunately, what we find in NIST is they are unable to provide a full explanation. They admit that
right
now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, you know, I like what FEMA said, that they were honest enough to admit in their May 1st, 2002
right
report that, you know, they found traces of sulfur residue that represents a significant event, you know, that caused the temperatures to rise significantly. And this needs to be looked into. It never was.
You know, this, let me follow up on that, Charles, because it's a good point. There's an Appendix C of the FEMA report on the World Trade Center. They talk about sulfidation, sulfur found in the steel samples. Both World Trade Center 7 and towers had this strange effect. They were unable to explain it. And NIST, unfortunately, did not handle or did not deal with those data. We, of course, do have an explanation for those data by simply adding sulfur to thermite. Then it makes the thermite cut more readily through steel. And in the explosive form of thermite, nanothermite, adding sulfur is not needed. It's interesting. So there are at least two forms of thermite implicated in the data.
Right. Exactly. Okay, we've got some other questions that are coming in through the text here. Here's one, Lydia from Chicago. She asks, does he think that the government will ever admit their own part in 9/11?
Wow. You see, it becomes an international problem now to have a government that... will they ever allow a real investigation is the first step to getting to that. Or an impeachment, you see. Impeachment has been raised by Kucinich and, who is it, Wexler, I think, in Congress. And, of course, Pelosi said impeachment's off the table.
Oh, yes.
Which to me is the same as saying the Constitution's off the table. I mean, this this right of the people of impeachment is off the table. And I'm saying, wait a minute, you know, what if there's a problem? We do have a problem. But anyway, if impeachment is allowed, we can get to the facts out, and we can get to an admission of these problems. We already see it, as I mentioned, some of the white hats, the good guys at NIST, admitting that they're unable to provide a full explanation, admitting that the towers came down essentially at free fall speed, and that the pancake theory is incorrect, and so on. So I have some hope, yes, that we can get there. The problem is the guys without an investigation, the guys that may have been involved in the lack of air defenses that day may pull another event of this type, you see.
Yeah.
And they may attack Iran, for example, or support an attack on Iran. There's just some concerns that we seem to be going kind of slowly. I don't know quite what to do there except keep pushing. You know, you have people like Richard Gage out there talking and doing just a great job, and that frees me up, I'm glad to say, for research, which is just what I'm contributing to the 9/11 truth effort.
I could fathom them launching an attack here and trying to frame Iran.
Yeah, it's amazing. So it is a big concern, but yes, I think we can eventually get to the an admission. Frankly, it would be much better for our government to get back the Constitution, have an impeachment, for example, or an investigation, whichever path you want to start with, get the facts out on the table about 9/11, and then have a cleansing process in which justice is administered. And, you know, apologies issued. You know, we're sorry for these attacks on Iraq, you know, for example. There was no real basis for that in justice, and so there has to be an apology. And then I think we can get back to some degree of greatness in our country and peace if we can make those admissions.
Trying to restore any degree of respect that we had in this world is a very difficult task at this point.
It is.
I mean, he's so trashed our reputation, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, just the torture thing alone.
Yes. That's another, and these are related, you know. The torture, the 9/11 wars, the North American Union, the national debt going through the roof, I mean, illegal immigration, just the porous borders. All these things are, and people are waking up to one piece or another is what I'm finding. and having a sense of concern that, hey, the directions of the country are need to be corrected. And right
well,
away.
You know, in one twisted way, it's kind of a good thing that they pursued their power grab so aggressively, because it has woken a lot of people up, and precious few can deny anymore what we're dealing with. These people are just, you know, war-hungry madmen.
Well, you phrase it that way, and, you know, the fact is they have sought war, and they are still seeking war.
Sure.
And I don't find in the Constitution any justification for aggressive or preemptive war.
No.
It talks about defense, so that's a huge change.
In fact, troops can't even be deployed by the president until Congress first declares war, and they haven't done that since World War II.
Yeah, right. So we need to get back. The Constitution, there's a great deal of wisdom there, as the founders had experienced King George, you know, and the tyranny there. And we see some parallels today, don't we? And getting back the Constitution would be a step, and impeachment. You know, I've raised that issue for a long time. It was not very popular at the university I taught at before. But it's a right that I have as a citizen.
Sure.
Under the Constitution to request this redress for grievances in a peaceful way. An impeachment is a trial, after all, a fair trial. Mm-hmm. Why were there no air defenses that day?
Right.
Who made
no reprimands?
Right. Right. And who made money on the put options, for example?
Yeah, insider trading. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have.
Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say we have some other questions here. This is a really good one. I was going to be asking you soon too for your website. Now, of course, you have more research coming up, but for what you already currently have, this comes from Adam in California.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does Professor Jones publish his findings? If so, when and where?
Okay, good. Our latest paper is in the Open Civil Engineering Journal, 2008. Came out in April. This is the 14-point paper, and I would encourage you to Google on some of those terms, 14 points. Civil Engineering Journal should bring it up. You can also go to the Journal of 9/11 Studies.com, and there's a link near the top on the homepage to this journal. And 911truth.org also has a link to the paper, as does stj911.org. That's Scholars for Truth and Justice, for 9/11 Truth and Justice.
So now, your upcoming findings...
Upcoming findings, yes, are being prepared for publication in peer-reviewed journals.
Will they eventually be on these same websites?
Well, they'll be linked there. Now, let me make a point. If you go to the Journal of 9/11 Studies, that's where there are over 100 peer-reviewed papers. But the focus is 9/11. It's not a mainstream journal. We have to admit that. Mm-hmm. So what we've done is to seek publication... Well, for over a year in mainstream journals, and we're finally now, we've broken the ice with this civil engineering journal that I mentioned. And so now we have a paper which, by a colleague, one of the co-authors, and he has written a paper. It's been accepted for a mainstream journal. There's another paper that's gone through the peer review process by this small group of researchers where we're coordinating our efforts. It has passed peer review, but it's sitting with the editors. It's a funny thing that way.
Hasn't gone anywhere.
Hasn't been published, but it should. And then we have three other papers now that are just getting ready. These will discuss the red chips, the red gray chips. And those will go to established, in other words, mainstream. Journals. We're not planning, in other words, we're trying to shift the emphasis now to mainstream journals as opposed to the Journal of 9/11 Studies, simply because it will reach a broader audience.
Oh, yeah.
And among scientists and engineers, it's expected that if you have good results, you'll be able to publish in established journals. So that's what we're doing. And I'm not saying it's the only approach. Others, like Richard Gage, you're giving talks. This is very helpful. David Ray Griffin, I understand, has another book coming out.
Oh,
you know, this is what they do best, and it's great.
Yeah.
And so, and others are copying and distributing DVDs of talks, giving copies of some of these important papers.
We all have our role to play, yeah.
Yeah, and yourself, you know, the media, it's just very helpful to have everybody using their talents as best they can to get the facts out. I think
Absolutely.
Our numbers are quite great, actually, internationally. The opposition...
Now again, the website was journalofnineelevenstudies.org, was it?
No, .com.
Oh, that one's .com. Okay. Great.
And it's
just
one word, journalofnineelevenstudies.com, 911studies.com.
Yeah.
Right.
Great.
Yeah.
We have another question here.
Cool.
This one is from Gay in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. And she asks, I would like to ask if Professor Jones will be coming to speak in Canada, either at McMaster University in Hamilton or one of the universities in Toronto. Are you anticipating any?
There is a conference planned in Canada, but I believe it's in British Columbia, and that's in October. It's just on the planning stages. I've said I'd be glad to come again to Canada to speak. I don't have anything. I don't know of any conferences in Eastern Canada at this time. It'd be great.
Well, they can certainly check out your website and see your research there.
Right.
Tell you what, we have
right.
another call-in,
okay.
another caller. We've got Mike from California. Mike, you there?
Yes, I am. Hi. Great show. Professor Jones, my question for you. Have you ever been approached or challenged by popular mechanics to face off with them on a series of articles with your point of view or something like that? Thank you.
Uh-huh. That would be fun. No, they have not approached me. First, I would mention that the pancake theory has been rejected by NIST, and I agree with that rejection. This is, of course, one of the fundamental premises of the popular mechanics article and book, and this premise has been dismissed.
It's amazing
soundly.
Somebody still used that argument, and it's already been debunked by NIST itself. Yeah,
that's correct, yeah. So, yeah, I'd be delighted to talk with those fellows. However, now we've reached a new level with publication in the civil engineering journals that I mentioned. So, really, the debate now should go to the peer-reviewed journals. That's the scientific... See, in Newton's day, this was set up, this procedure of peer-review publication, so as to promote science. And, you know, it's worked very well for over 300 years, and so that's the approach. I'd be delighted if Popular Mechanics would actually, those guys, would actually publish a response to my 14 points paper, for example, or any of these debunkers.
Mm.
That would be wonderful. I'd like to see how they respond. I mean, what are they going to
sure.
say? NIST says that the pancake theory is... no good, but we don't agree with NIST. I mean, what are they going to say?
Yeah, exactly. That's going to put them in a very uncomfortable...
It puts them in a tough spot, I hope.
Yeah.
But that's what the facts do, finally. It makes people think.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we got another question here. Jen in Washington, she wants to know, what exact compounds did you find in the ground zero material, and whether they could possibly be interpreted as being something else?
Yeah. Well, we always look for alternative explanations. As I discussed at San Diego State University, and as I'll further discuss in papers in detail, but let me just mention the gist of it, which was discussed at the university, and that is we find in the red chips, we find aluminum, and iron and oxygen. There's some other elements that appear as well, such as silicon and potassium, very commonly, and carbon. But the signature is there for thermite. So then you say, well, how do you know? You react it. You put it in a... I'm not sure. I'll go into the detail. We put it in a device. I think I better wait till that's published. But we reacted in a controlled way and measure the heat output, the energy output, and the temperature at which it reacts, and is it over a very short time, or is it sort of over a long time? You know, what's the characteristic? And I'll just say that all our results, and there are others, are consistent then with the use of nanothermite. And the caller might want to Google on nanothermite. I'm hoping, you mentioned, Charles, you hadn't heard of these red chips before, but if people will Google on nanothermite and find out about this stuff, that's what we're finding such strong evidence for. No, we haven't. I have looked at the paint hypothesis. It is certainly not paint. And mm-hmm. We rule it out by these experiments.
Yeah, so I mean, and of course, as you just mentioned now, in your recent findings, you've been able to ignite this material.
Right. Under controlled conditions, right.
You're not dealing with baby powder.
It's very vigorous in its reaction, yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. To me, that is just far more significant than even your previous findings. That's conclusive,
I think so.
If you ask me. Yeah.
Well, I think so. Yeah. We're poised.
Has there been any effort to try to subpoena some of the still remaining debris that hasn't been melted down that's in Hangar 17 at the JFK Airport mm-hmm. in New York?
Oh, that's a good question. That was one of the main questions I had for my congressman. As I mentioned, I had agreement by three of his staff members that they would let me talk to this August fellow, you know, but I mean, he has the responsibility to listen to redress for grievances requests, and in fact, it didn't get very far. But we are continuing to try. There was a petition that I put together with James Gourley, mainly, in which we requested access to Hangar 17. We do have access, however, to the dust. And so just because of private collectors who want to know the truth, who are interested in peace, and like Jeanette McKinley and Frank D'Alessio, I mean, I could go through a list of names. We have now five different dust samples that we're studying between in our team. Not just through me, by the way, but sent directly to investigators. There are four geographically distinct laboratories that are working on the World Trade Center dust now from the point of view of understanding the spheres and the red chips. So this is I think, unstoppable now.
Snowball's going down the hill.
It's going fast. I'm very concerned, though, as you mentioned, about an attack on Iran or some other event.
Sure.
That would give an excuse for hushing people up, basically one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these threats, like we get from Michael Reagan, threatening to kill people, those who ask questions about 9/11, it's just off scale. But
it's like they're trying to condition people.
Yeah, but it's not there yet, fortunately. Mm-hmm. So we're just really trying to hurry and get this information out. I might
sure.
say that
well, you're right. I mean, if we had a major event, that would pretty much be the end of it. I mean, they could just pull those stops out and,
well,
you know.
People talk about the possibility of martial law, for example.
Sure. Yeah.
And a suspension of the Constitution would result certainly in a suspension of freedom
major
of
crackdown.
Speech.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they do have that card in their hand.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hope that's not the case, but
right.
If it is, I mean, the truth won't matter then, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But you know what's great?
Go ahead.
I was going to say what's great, folks, about talking with someone like Professor Jones here is he is a physicist. A lot of people who defend the official story will say, well, what do you know? You're not a scientist. Well, here's a scientist right here. Who's been working on this for years now, and he's uncovered some major smoking loaded guns. And,
right.
You can't refute this stuff. It's,
right.
You know, this is...
I might say along those lines, Charles, that I'm very pleased with the growth of this group, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Last time I checked, they had something over 400 architects and engineers signed up. I'm there as a scientist. I tried to encourage Richard to have a scientist category, but it doesn't matter. We're all working together with what talents we have, you see. So,
now, are these mostly Americans, or do you have any foreign?
They're from all over the world.
Wow. No kidding. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, people are coming out, and, you know, so that shows it's not just uneducated, paranoid people that see through this. I mean.
Right.
Well credentialed.
Yeah, I just looked it up. 404 today architectural and engineering professionals, and 1,889 other supporters,
wow,
including students. So you know that's over 2,000 now. So that group is really gung ho, and they have a good team. It's not just Richard, of course. And
fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, we have about 1 minute left. I wanted you maybe to give us some nation statement. But before I do that, I just want to mention once again, folks, the website, journalof911studies.com, and you mentioned a couple others.
Yes, ae911truth.org, 911truth.org, STJ, Scholars of Truth and Justice, 911, stj911.org, wtc7.net. There's just a lot of good sources of information.
Excellent.
Of course, I like the peer-reviewed journal articles. I think that's where you get the latest, best information that we have.
Right.
You know, let me mention 9/11 Blogger, too. People should be aware of
that. Yeah, well, that's very good. Very good resource, yeah.
Yeah, it is. What's going on?
blogger.com. Well, is there any final point? We're really running short here on time.
I appreciate talking to you, Charles. I guess I just emphasize that this effort, this worldwide effort to get at the facts about 9/11 is an effort finally for truth and justice and peace. I can see the pathway to peace is bringing up the truth about lack of air defenses, why the buildings actually were destroyed, how, and so on.
Well, you've certainly done a lot in that direction, and I want to thank you and commend you
and encourage
you to keep going strong, because you've done a lot to help forward that cause. Anyway,
that
is all the time that we have, unfortunately.
Okay.
I want to thank you for coming, and keep it up. We'll be watching,
Charles,
for your future reports. Thank you.
Great.
Okay,
my
folks,
bye-bye.
We got to wrap it up here. I just wanted to mention tomorrow night, same time, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, I will be on here again on BBS Radio on the People Speak Radio show, peoplespeakradio.net. And our guests tomorrow are going to be Corey Rowe and Dylan Avery, the director and producer of the Loose Change 9/11 series of documentaries. So you don't want to miss that. So have a good evening, and we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening in. Bye-bye.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the seawall, by the relief of the fast, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah,
Weirwood, $5,000 per week takes you. Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.
Feel it. Can you feel it? Something about the way you try to love, it's getting right to me, deeper than it really should. What are you, an angel, or just looking that good? When you take your time, you are so divine. I'm not surprised, I'd like to watch you in this light.